We start today's program with Adrian Fontas, who has officially won the Maricopa County Recorder election. This is how Fontas first became known to the public during a legislative hearing.
When I went home that night so late and got up so early in the morning and had breakfast with my kids, they asked me why I was so mad. My 11 and 8 and 6-year-old girls, whose Girl Scout cookie clip I have with me, were wondering. And I tried to explain to them why people were so mad. And in that discomfort of trying to explain to children, I decided that I was going to run for Maricopa County Recorder. Now, hold on. Don't take my time. I will tell you right now that I do not want Helen Purcell to resign. I want to beat her at the ballot box.
And that was Adrian Fontas several months ago. A much calmer, well-dressed version of Adrian Fontas joins me now in studio. Welcome and congratulations to you.
I am certainly dressed for radio. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Now, you seem to have gained a lot of fans, I would think, that day because you were so passionate in your response and people were so upset after what happened in the presidential preference election. How long did it take you to actually think, I want to run for this? And did you think you had a chance to win?
Well, actually, it wasn't. It didn't take very long to think that I wanted to run for this. As a matter of fact, that's absolutely true, and I've been talking about the same thing throughout the entire campaign. You know, just about every crowd that I get in front of, because it's true. You know, it was my kids, specifically Olivia, my oldest, who's 11 now. You know, she was her third grade class president. She wrote her own speech, and you know, the ideas of constitutional government and democracy are very important to her. And yeah, I was in at that moment, at the end of that discussion, I was in my trial lawyer mode, and it was a passion based in a love of democracy, you know. And, you know, you could say the same thing about the folks that did the Boston Tea Party. They weren't exactly buttoned up and speaking calmly when they got on board in those ships and dumped all the tea into the harbor. That was a moment that called for it. I think in that sort of a hearing, it wasn't certainly intended to do anything, but it was as an expression of the outrage that so many people felt in the denial of these fundamental rights. I mean, these rights that we would send our young people overseas to die for and to defend. And when that gets denied to people, emotion is absolutely important, because how else do you get the point across?
Adrian, a lot of people run for office, though, based on passion or based on really wanting to serve the public. But when you actually get down there and have to do the job, sometimes it's disappointing, sometimes it's boring, sometimes whatever. Are there certain changes you think have to be implemented? And actually, in some ways, I guess you're getting a little bit of a bonus in that there isn't going to be an election right away. You can get in there and implement some changes that you want. But can you, as recorder, just tell us what you can do and what you really want to do as soon as possible?
The first thing I want to do is really make a significant adjustment in the attitude of the office, both publicly, and I think the attitude of the folks that already work there is where we want to take the public attitude of the office. So, for example, we see even as late as yesterday and the day before, we see spokespeople for the office saying, "Well, you know, it's the risk that voters take if they go to vote at the last second and just throw it in there and on the signature validations on the pill." No, that's not true. That's not the attitude. Ought not be how do we keep people from voting and how do we disqualify ballots. The attitude in the office ought to be, how do we get as many eligible U.S. citizens to be enfranchised? How do we get this self-governance as much of, how do we get it to permeate as deeply as possible into the fabric of our entire society? Because that's what folks have fought for. I mean, you know, you get someone like Susan B. Anthony beaten and dragged through the streets so that women could have the right to vote. You get so many members of our African-American community, so many of them still alive today, who remember having dogs loosed upon them and having water cannons burst on them. You know, Americans fought for this, and we've been fighting for this right inside of our own country, inside of our own communities for a very, very long time. Having gained these rights now, we can see a slow deterioration of them, a slow denial of them, and it's that slow drip, drip, drip that has to be stopped. And without exciting a little bit of passion, you can't really expose the truth of it, and that passion really blossomed in the performance of the leadership in the office and that attitude that has come forth since then. And really, these problems are not new. in that office. If we look back through the course of the campaign, we've seen these issues popping up year in and year out over the years, and the response has always been the same. But because it only impacted small numbers of people throughout the county, I think it didn't get the attention that it deserved. And it's, you know, really, before the last few months, nobody kind of cared about elections that much. And so your question's a good one, right? It's not something that folks really got excited about, and now they are excited, so.
Do you think some of this is too focused on what folks like me and other members of the media sort of demand, in that we need to know exactly what's happening that night? Polls close at 7. By 8 o'clock, we want the results and this sort of thing. Because in some cases, that's what it seems like. There's a we're still counting. No. Everyone wants it. Okay.
No, absolutely not. Let's look at last week. Last week, there were four elections that occurred in the Arizona legislature. The state House, the state Senate, for Republicans and Democrats. Mm-hmm. They elected their leadership. In the state Senate, we had no idea who was going to be the senator out of Legislative District 28, which is a relatively affluent district. It takes up parts of, you know, Central Phoenix and Paradise Valley and things of this nature. Those voters did not have a representative in the Democratic or Republican race for state Senate leadership. Mm-hmm. That means that they were merely not represented. And it has to do with the fact that the county recorder's office did not plan in conjunction with the other political bodies to make sure that they had someone on the ballot. So regardless of who won the election, right, whether it was Eric Meyer or I think it was Kate Brophy McGee, and she ended up winning, and congratulations to her. But the reality is neither one of those potential representatives had their constituency didn't have a representative in that leadership selection race. Mm-hmm. And that's not fair. And at the end of the day, when you look at that, those voters were disenfranchised and they were not representative in the democratic process. That's just wrong. So it doesn't really have much at all to do with the media and you guys and your 15-minute cycles and all that stuff. It has to do with the fact that even last week, we had an instance where voters were not represented in the halls of government. Mm-hmm. And that's wrong.
How much do you think we learned, or the office learned, from having four elections in 2016, which, you know, got up to a very bumpy start? Did this force the idea that, you know, change is really needed?
Absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, it's interesting. I've had conversations with a great many people over the last several months, and really folks woke up in March and they realized, wow, when people talk about being disenfranchised, when people talk about long lines to vote, when people talk about inadvertently having their voter registration changed without their knowledge or being stricken from voter rolls, this actually hits home. And I think it was a real, in one sense, it was a real good wake-up call, because an issue, a topic that had been really reserved for the marginalized, if you will, hit the majority, and it hit folks really hard. You know, there were long lines all over the valley this time, and that's what fired up folks, and they got starting to pay attention.
In your heart of hearts, should Arizona be back under the Voting Rights Act? Did that cause more problems not having that?
Well, I can't say specifically, and the reason I hesitate is because I don't know how the decision was made. And I think that's a very important component, because at the end of the day, the Voting Rights Act really tries to ensure that the decision makers are making decisions the right way in accordance with the law. And so until we get in there and we are apprised of how those 60 polling places were established, right, those voting centers, mm-hmm. I won't be able to say that methodology violated the Voting Rights Act or not. And so I can tell you in my heart of hearts that my heart has to be informed. I mean, I'm an attorney after all, and I got to have the facts. So when you ask me something with a legal conclusion attached to it, I kind of try to put the heart side over here and think about it. And I think it would be unfair of me to give you a solid answer to that question right now without all the information.
So you're not taking over till January, so this could be a tough question to answer as well. But what about budgeting? That had been cited that the supervisors perhaps didn't give enough to that office, and that caused some of the problems that resulted in 2016.
Well, I'll tell you, I was in Sun City on election day, campaigning outside of the 75-foot line, of course, and a voter, we'll just say with a lot of life experience, came up and we started chatting, and she said that she had gone in intending to vote for me. And she went in and voted, and then she came back out and she said, you know, we talked about money and budgets, and she says, you know, it's okay to be frugal about the stuff that doesn't matter. It's okay to be frugal about the trivial things. And I really took that to heart. No one had ever said it that way to me before. So when it comes to budgeting, when it comes to dollars and cents, if we have to get more money, we need to understand, and I'll be advocating for this not only with the supervisors but with the legislature and the governor's office and whoever's, you know, going to be the source of these funds. This isn't trivial. This is the essence of our self-governance that we're talking about here. So, you know, we're not talking about cloth napkins versus paper napkins at a picnic. We're talking about our democracy.
Adrian, finally, there's been discussion about your heritage. And I wonder how important it is to you that you're a Latino elected official in Maricopa County.
Well, that's a good question. You know, my family has been in the region here, south of the Gila River, for at least 300 years. You know, there's records of ancestors being riding with the Spanish cavalry and being around 100 years before the Presidio in Tucson was built. And I take great pride in the fact that, you know, when I support local businesses, this is like super local, right? It's very important to me because it's about my identity. It's about who I am, but it's also about being able to recognize that while we make decisions for the here and now, mm-hmm. having a longer story and having connections to your own roots really brings you closer in touch with the future. And it makes the next several generations that much closer. Instead of just doing stuff today, I have to think about a lot of tomorrows because I recognize all of my yesterdays. Mm-hmm. And that is going to inform the way we move forward. And that's, you know, why my kids motivated me to do this.
Adrian Fontes, he is the next Maricopa County recorder. Adrian, thanks for coming in.
Thanks so much for having me. I had a great time.